You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 11th of December, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioalbion.com. Well, it's Wednesday, it's the middle of the week. That means we must have with us today revisionist historian Carolyn Yeager from carolynyeager.net. Good afternoon to you, Carolyn. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and I hope you're doing well, Sven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, I was going to say, yes, I've just been having a read of your latest article, Angie Goes to Auschwitz. It's quite a lengthy article filled with lots and lots of information there and things that I wasn't actually aware of, lots of detail, and I was hoping maybe we could get into some of that today.
Well, yes, of course. And, you know, this is something I've written that I like myself. I'm often so very critical of what I do, or you know, I think it's important. It's the only thing that's going on that I care about, you know, that I think is worth commenting on. But this one, I was quite happy with it, more than some others. And yeah, I learned a little bit myself in writing it. And the overall idea, I want to say, is that there was no reason for German Chancellor Angela Merkel to go to Auschwitz. So why did she go, you know, and what is the purpose? So there's multiple purposes, you know, there's purposes behind purposes.
I'm surprised it's her first time, to be honest. I mean, I would have thought it was something that she would be doing regularly every year. She would be going to Auschwitz to worship the memorial. That was the first thing that struck me. Is there any reason why she may not have gone there before, do you think? Or,
well, I don't think they like to go there. You know, they have to, all of the leaders, they have to show the proper respect to the Jews, but they don't really want to go and look at that stuff. They might know that it's all fake, you know, that's largely fake. They might know that, or they might really believe it. I'm not sure about that. They have to know that some of it is fakery, but so that's why they don't really go. She did go to Buchenwald and she went to Dachau, but because only three chancellors have gone now, her and Helmut Schmidt and Helmut Kohl. And I wasn't paying attention. I don't remember their visits there. It wasn't something in my worldview. So, but this one is, and I think it's more political, this visit, than anything else, for political reasons. But the Washington Post said that she's been, I think they've got it right, you know, that she's been, she wanted to go before she left office. And so she was going to go before, but she's got supposedly two more years before her term is up, when she says she's going to retire in 2021. And so, she thought she'd wait, probably, this is my speculation, closer toward the end of her term. And, but she's feeling threatened because of, I take it that she really does feel like, this coalition with the SPD that we've talked about a number of times is gonna fold up, might just fall apart. And then she has to have new elections, either run a minority government or have new elections, which might be even worse than what she's got going now. So she decided, and her people, her political advisors and so on, decided to go ahead and do it now, because it seems like it just came up with, you know, I never heard any talk about it. Now, it could be, I just, of course, don't know, and maybe they've been working on this for a while. But, you know, she went with all the Jews. I mean, what I thought was interesting was that I called it her Jewish entourage that she's photographed with there. They're all Jews. I mean, and all the Jews, all the important Jews in Germany and around the world and so on were there, you know, and that's all. So no Germans, no other Germans. Some of them are German, but they're Jews. So, or they're German citizens, you know. It's just...
It's a very strange thing, isn't it?
It just shows that the Holocaust is a totally... Then the Holocaust industry is a totally Jewish operation.
Well, it's a very strange idea in the first place that you would go to somewhere that you think you'd done a very bad thing and to keep going back there and making a big thing about it. But I guess she's looking at it that it brings the Germans together and it's going to get them on her side if she goes there and shows herself mourning for the 6 million or whatever it is they're claiming it is now. And, if she's worried that the coalition is going to be falling apart, then maybe she thinks that will help to get people to support her. If she shows her support for the Holocaust industry and shows her support for the Jews, then the Jews will support her. And then on top of that, she's also got a good excuse to point out that the AfD are just like the Nazis, and if we allow the AfD to continue, it will end up in a Holocaust like this, because I think she made mention of something along those lines as well, didn't she?
Well, I don't think so, but by implication. But I think that's right. That's I think that could be the bigger reason pushing it. Because everybody knows she's all for the Jews and so on. She doesn't need to tell people that or point that and make that clear. I think that there's this effort now by all German political parties and politicians, other than the AfD and, say, the NPD and so on, the real nationalist party, to try to hold the AfD down, because it's rising, you know, in voter strength. So I like to make the point that in Germany, there's just one, particularly in the media, and then it's pushed by the politicians and so on, but the media does it for them. And just one story after another about, how serious the far right terrorism is and so on, which is just not true. But just the way they play it up, you know, in other countries too, your country, my country, that there's a serious problem with the far right. You know, we got an anti-Semitism, terrible problem with anti-Semitism. We have to address that. We have to maybe pass a few more laws. And it's these Jewish organizations are behind it all, and it's not ever pointed out that that's who's doing it, and for their own interests, and not for the interests of the general population of Germans or British or Americans. But that's, this game is played. It's just ridiculous. And because the media, because the media all together go along with it, most people never get another point of view, but a lot of them can figure it out. But you have to listen to people like us to get another point of view. And that's not a lot of people. So that's, you know, the reason, that she would go there. But the why she'd go there right now, I think, is because she feels she could very well be in trouble.
And I think they were trying to get some money out of her as well. because you were pointing out that she'd paid out loads of money before in the past, and now she's shelled out another huge amount of money to them. Just, you know, no actual need to.
That's part of this story, which is interesting, because as usual, it turns out that Germany's doing all the funding to keep the Jewish narrative alive and so on, and to keep Germany blamed for everything. She's trying to keep Germany under the globalist control, because that's who she works for. That's what they all work for. So in doing so, you know, Germany is sacrificed. Now, I think they came up with this justification for her trip by having Germany donate to this foundation on its 10th anniversary. Well, what it is there is, you know, Auschwitz-Birkenau, as I pointed out, is big business for Poland. It's the biggest tourist attraction in Poland. Now, just think of that. That brings a lot of money into Poland just by people coming there and then doing other things and spending money in hotels and restaurants and buying things and traveling around a little bit more. But the for so many, which was why I went, was to see Auschwitz. I wouldn't care about seeing anything else in Poland, but I saw a little bit more, you know, and I wasn't there that long, but I did even myself spend a little bit of money. And then, but I mean, there's a lot of tourism there because of this, because of these sites. And there's not, Auschwitz is not the only one, but of course it's the biggest and most popular one.
So they're basically, the Poles are making all the money out of this Holocaust industry, out of all these sites, and particularly Auschwitz, and they're not actually the ones paying the upkeep. Germans are the ones paying the upkeep, and the Poles are the ones making all the money from it, from the tourism industry.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say Germans are paying all the money, but probably, I don't know exactly, but I did want to say that the camps, Auschwitz-Birkenau has a council that is made up, was started after the war, of former inmates and communists. You know, it was all communists, although the communists had taken over. So everything was communist controlled, what was going on there. And so the communists formed this council of survivors of the camp, and then they wanted to keep it going, and they made a they have a whole bunch of people running that, so that they run the museums and the publicity and all of that and the educational programs and so on. But then there's another group that is the Auschwitz-Birkenau Foundation, which only in 2009 did that start. And that was really pushed by the World Jewish Congress in the beginning to raise money. And so they created this foundation. And it's supposed to be, you know, it's probably made up of a bunch of Jews, a bunch of communists, and so on. And they, and Poles. And that is for keeping the grounds, the buildings, for repairing all these crumbling buildings. They said this place is falling apart, as it should. You know, it's crumbling. And if we don't do something, it won't be here. Oh, God forbid. So that they got that started. And as usual, because they have the help of all the people with money and all the wealthy billionaires and all the governments and so on, and they just keep getting stronger and stronger and getting more governments to speak out, you know, as in favor of all this Holocaust industry. So in 2009, Donald Tusk was the Polish prime minister. And though this foundation wasn't started by him or by Poland, he sent letters to all these countries, dozens of countries, and requested help, financial help, through this foundation to do all this renovation work on the buildings and the grounds at Auschwitz-Birkenau. And so Germany stepped up and donated 60 million euros over the course of 4 years. And then in 2010, a year later, Germany donated an extra 120,000 to cover the cost of running the office of the foundation. So Poland, or nobody else could even supposedly, you know, or these rich Jews or whatever, couldn't cover the cost of running the office. So, you know, somebody else had to do it. And now, and then the other people who donated took them a while. In 2010, Austria came up with 6 million. The United States gave 12 million in comparison to Germany's 60 million. And then finally in 2011, Great Britain pledged 2.4 million, where they have such an investment in the Holocaust, but that's not a huge amount. But, you know, nobody really wanted to give to this. And then Poland, I guess, was shamed into coming up with 10 million. And this is all in euros, not dollars or pounds or anything. And then Israel only donated 715,000. These are the people with the greatest interest in it. And then other nations donated lesser amounts, in some cases far lesser. So then they were going along with that money and supposedly doing these improvements with the idea we have to keep Auschwitz-Birkenau around forever. You know, I mean, we think it should die away, you know, in time. But no, they want to make it. And so they have this perpetual fund, this foundation does. And their goal, they have this goal to raise 120 million in total, which they can then invest in, you know, like market, in the markets and in bonds and so on, whatever you invest in, which would, to bring them in an annual income of about 4 to 5 million a year. And then they can run the grounds, and that's separate from all the money that they raise and spend and use for just the running, the everyday kind of running of the memorial, and all the people that they pay to do that, and the educational programs and all of that, and the donations they get for that. So there's two different groups that are pulling in a bunch of money. And then I point out that that there's a lot of people, therefore, that benefit from working there. And they're all Jews and or Poles. There's non-Jewish Poles, of course. And then there's Jews. And then there's probably Poles that are Jews. But that's basically, so it's a big industry in Poland. If it died, they would have a lot of unemployed people there. You know, they're all in that together. And who is the biggest helper of all? Germany, because Germany is marked with this guilt that they can never undo. You know, when they first started with the reparations back in the, I can't think of when exactly it was, the 50s, I think, and talked about it. Yeah, it was the late 40s when they passed that. And Germany was going to pay up all this money. And they did. And, you know, over a number of years, they paid all these millions and billions for their guilt in the Holocaust, for these Holocaust survivors. Well, they come up with new things all the time, as we know, we've talked about. They come up with new survivors. They come up with the children of survivors who are suffering. And I read recently that they've now trying to say it's genetic. It made a genetic change in people who are survivors, or if they weren't survivors, but if they had children who are surviving, and then their grandchildren. Now it made a genetic change in these people that will last forever. You know, they're genetically, they have a genetic disability because of what these Jews went through. It's absolutely unbelievable. And then you have a person like Angela Merkel, who is not dumb and who is a PhD in physics or something, and who goes along with this. And I was thinking, probably because of the season, that we're expecting German people, who are some of the most intelligent people in the world. I'm not saying they're the most intelligent, but they're among the most intelligent people in the world, to believe this Holocaust story, which is like asking adults to believe in Santa Claus, really, because if you look at the whole thing, the whole narrative, it just can't be. Like, how could an adult believe that some character like Santa Claus can fly all over the world, or at least all over the Western world, in one night and leave all these presents for only little children? Can believe that. You know, there's up to the age of 7, they say, the age of reason, they will believe stuff like that. But we're expected to believe this nonsensical Holocaust story, and people do. People do. And I bet Merkel believes it, because she won't let herself not believe it. She won't question it. If you refuse to question something, this represents all this to me, this story, which is...
But you've got all the shoes. You've got all the shoes there, Carolyn, and the wigs. And, you know, that's proof. That's proof. Six million.
Yeah, see, because I met, when I was there, I met a British man, he and his wife, very nice. We were having a very nice, civilized conversation. Well, he was with somebody else until I came along. And then I asked him what he thought of the camp. They were ready to leave, and so was I. And he said, "Oh, it's just, you know, amazing." And I brought up, I can never help myself, about the shoes, and the stuff like that in the museum. That wouldn't convince anybody of anything. It doesn't prove anything. Oh, he was really indignant. And he said, "Well, it does me." You know, and his wife could see that it was going to get bad, so she hurried him along, and they left to go over to the bus stop. And, you know, it was like people want to be convinced of this. So they let that convince them. They look at those shoes, and as I pointed out, that luggage, and they start having ideas about all these poor people that were dragged there and under false pretenses and fooled and all their belongings taken from them and tortured and treated terribly and thrown in gas chambers. They don't want to look at the science or the fictional narrative side of it.
Of course, all this money that's coming from Germany, that's going to sort of keep these things going forever and keep these buildings going forever. And I think you also point out in the article that Poland is trying to purchase one of these sites or something from Germany.
Oh yeah, I did that in a comment, because I saw another article about that. Let's see, it's the third comment under there. Poland wants to buy land in Austria. It's amazing. The prime minister of Poland, who I say is Jewish, and some guy wrote and said he's not Jewish and you can't prove it. And then I just had this article from the Times of Israel that said a couple of years ago that he had said he was Jewish, and I posted about that. I commented about that, and then adversary of mine, Franklin Reichardt, he backed that up by saying that Morawiecki was a Jewish name, and that it was his father's name, and that that the Jewish newspaper in Israel, the Times, would not say he was a Jew if they didn't believe it and think it wasn't true, because the Jews don't want to claim. I take it from what he says that the Jews don't want to claim non-Jews as being Jewish, because they're so, you know, they're so protective of their brand and so on, and who's a Jew and who's not a Jew and so on. So they don't want to claim people as Jews if they're not. So, and that was
pretty amazing. So, that pretty amazing that they accused Poland of being anti-Semitic, and yet the prime minister is Jewish. You know, it was only a few months back they were calling them anti-Semitic.
So, well, Poland, as I've written, Poland is schizophrenic about that, because they both want to deny anti-Semitism and say that the Poles were heroes in saving Jews, you know, from the hated Nazis, because they hate the Nazis more than the Jews, I guess. And at the same time, they want to claim that they're the more anti-Semitic than anybody else in Europe. You know, I mean, another portion of Poles want to do that. They're very proud of their history of anti-Semitism, except for the ones who aren't, who go along with benefiting from the Holocaust and so on. So, you know, you got two big camps in Poland. And anyway, this prime minister said that they want to buy Mauthausen, so-called, they call it a death camp. They say Mauthausen was a death camp, and some people, they had a gas chamber, and some people were gassed there. That's been, you know, I mean, that's not true, according to us. I mean, I think it's been proven false, but they, you know, it depends on what proof you accept. But they just keep going with that. Anyway, they think it's not, it might fall apart like Auschwitz-Birkenau was in danger of falling apart if somebody doesn't take it over, and they don't trust the Austrians to do that, obviously. So they'd like to buy it. They don't, it hasn't come up though. They just want to talk about it, I guess. They hasn't come up how they would possibly buy land in Austria. I don't think Austria would go along with that. But I think it's maybe just a publicity thing, because they would like these camps. They want to make sure these camps are taken care of in perpetuity, so they can keep their Jew hoax going.
Keep that scam
forever
going.
Forever and ever. That's what's behind it all.
Maybe they also, you know, they're looking at it as the money they can make from it and the investment. Because, you know, if they can get hold of these camps, and they can get Germany to pay for the upkeep, and they can charge the entrance fees and make the money out of it, it's a big investment. I mean, it's a huge, huge scam, this Holocaust industry thing. Go on.
What bothers me is that one thing, I think what bothers me the most, one thing that bothers me a lot, is that Poland is going nationalist. Now, not everybody in Poland is for that, but the majority, and it's a pretty big majority that is, and they're talking very tough about how Poland is coming back, and Poland's, you know, they're all into Poland first. And yet they still, and the Germans who go there and take Poland's side will attack Germany for the very things that Poland is doing, and they will not attack Poland or criticize Poland, although maybe a little bit because the EU is critical of Poland. But they're not going to stop supporting Poland. Poland still gets money from the EU in the guise of it being a developing country and needing help. You know, Poland likes to thump its chest. You know, I'm kind of anti-Polish, but Poland likes to thump its chest about how strong it is, how independent and so on. At the same time, it's always taking money and wanting money from elsewhere.
So it's all right for Poland to be nationalist, but we can't have Germany being nationalist. That's the sort of attitude that you see from the Germans, because you see Merkel there with, you know, with this Polish prime minister, but at the same time she's condemning AfD for being nationalist within her own country, but she won't condemn that in Poland. You know,
let me say one more word here before we go. I think that this whole situation we have, this whole world order that we've got, is going to start unraveling. I've never thought that. This is the first time I've started having that belief that it's coming unraveled. And the reason that they're pushing all this stuff, and this is another instance of it, Merkel's visit, so hard, is that they fear that themselves. They know more than we do, and they must know something about that. They fear that they can't hold it together, that it's going to come apart. And these myths are part of what's coming apart. So I have hope. And so I'm hoping I can see some kind of big changes like this in my lifetime. It would be amazing because I really hadn't thought that before. And well, there's one more thing I was going to add, which now left me. So
it's out of desperation, isn't it? It's out of desperation what they're
yes.
doing. Absolutely, signs of desperation, you know, still going to these sites and desperately saying, well, we must keep it alive and we must come up with these ideas like genetic defects in the grandchildren of Holocaust survivors, and it must be pushed in the schools. And it just shows you that it's so flimsy and they're terrified that it's all going to fall down. It is going to fall down. It has to.
Right, and we see that also in the United States with this Democrat Party now, and this impeachment thing they're doing, which is way beyond the pale, and they're going to lose from it, and they're scared to death too. But why are they doing it? Out of desperation. They're desperate that Donald Trump will get
he's going to get another term, isn't he? He's going to get another term. That's what it is. And that's what they're terrified of.
And another term. Yeah, he's going to get reelected, and they have no way to stop it, and they're scared of what it'll do in his final 4 years. So these people are desperate, and in their desperation, they're making mistakes. You know, I think they're making big mistakes, and showing how bereft they are of real intelligence. You know, they're not smart, and they're ruining the world. They're destroyers. They're destroyers. The communists and Jews are basically destroyers. They're good at that. But they're not builders or constructive. That's what we do. So matter what you think of Donald Trump, and I know there's so much dislike of him among whites, but he is bringing out a lot of, I think, end times of things going on that is good, that could lead to a lot of change, big changes. So
They're not intelligent enough to actually credit the general public with intelligence. That's the thing. I think everybody can see that it's a huge scam that the Democrats are pulling with this impeachment fiasco, and it could well end up being the end of the Democrats with this. Anyway, we can talk about that when it happens. Thank you very much for coming on today, Carolyn. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.